This is All About Books on NET Radio. I'm your host, Pat Leach, director of Lincoln City Libraries. Today, I'm happy to welcome a guest reviewer to All About Books, Scott Stanfield. Scott is professor of English at Nebraska Wesleyan University, where he teaches writing, Irish literature, and English literature, among other things. He's also known as a very widely and well-read person. I invited Scott today to introduce the theme of the hero in literature. Listeners who are also PBS viewers are aware of the current project called The Great American Read. One of the focus programs for The Great American Read explores heroes and will highlight books on what they call America's List that feature heroic characters and explore why we love them. Scott, welcome to the program.
Oh, thank you, Pat.
What is it about a hero?
Under the rubric heroes provided by The Great American Read suggests, heroes can take on an astonishing variety of forms.
Mm-hmm.
Ignatius O'Reilly of the Confederacy of Dunces seems merely ridiculous to most of his neighbors. Don Quixote is not at all the kind of hero he imagines he is.
Mm-hmm.
Yossarian of Catch-22 is trying his best to avoid being a hero. And Charlotte of Charlotte's Web is a spider. What fictional heroes have in common, I would argue, is that they offer us readers an opportunity to expand our sense of who we are and how we can meet life's challenges through our identification with them as they confront their own challenges and their own puzzles about who they are. Imagining our way into the hero situation, we learn from the ways they summon their strength or courage or resourcefulness or other virtues, how we might do the same in our own situations. And this applies not only to the warriors in epics and the detectives in murder mysteries, but to someone like Christopher Boone in The Curious Incident of the Dog in the Nighttime. For the challenge Christopher faces, which is just taking the train to London to find his mother's flat, would not be daunting to most 15-year-olds, but the circumstance that he must make allowances for his autism spectrum disorder makes his journey as perilous and arduous as that of Odysseus. Participating imaginatively in his journey enlarges us. And even when the hero does not succeed, as Winston Smith in 1984 does not, as Hamlet and Antigone do not, we even so understand more of ourselves by understanding what mattered to them.
Mm-hmm.
The hero of Ralph Ellison's Invisible Man, which was published in 1952, does not even have a name. Now, contrary to what you might expect from the novel's title, he does not have any superpowers, and furthermore, everything he does goes wrong. Nonetheless, I, as a white American, learned something important from him. I learned about white privilege and how it feels not to have it. The invisible man is not invisible in the sense that he cannot be seen, but in the sense that he just does not register as a presence for his white fellow citizens. As he explains in the novel's famous first paragraph, "I am invisible, understand, simply because people refuse to see me. When they approach me, they see only my surroundings, themselves, or figments of their imagination. Indeed, everything and anything except me." The invisible man's invisibility is a consequence of what Ellison called in a later essay, the fantasy of a blackless America. So according to Ellison, I'll quote him here, "It is a fantasy born not merely of racism, but of petulance, of exasperation, of moral fatigue. It is like a boil bursting forth from impurities in the bloodstream of democracy." So the question the invisible man faces is, how do you navigate, how do you learn or work or interact in a society that looks at you and sees not a person, but a problem, or a threat, or a stereotype, or a subject for jokes or a tragedy. How do you navigate a society that would prefer not to see you at all, but to pretend that you were not even there? Thanks to Ellison's Invisible Man and its hero, I have some idea of the scope of an American problem I would have otherwise been unable to imagine. And I also have some idea of the community to which the Invisible Man belonged and its institutions and culture. The segregated southern city in which he was raised, the historically black college he attended and was kicked out of, the movements he joined, the world of the church, the world of the street, where promising young men do not survive routine encounters with the police. And then there is the music that seemed to see the Invisible Man when nothing else could see him. How this portrait of the African-American community between the two world wars would look to an African-American reader, I don't know, obviously, but to me, it was a revelation of another history, you know, kind of the secret sibling of the history I thought I knew.
In thinking about The Invisible Man as one of the books on America's list for the Great American Read, as you described that book again, it seems so clear that even though it was published in 1952, the issues that it raises are certainly issues that we see all the time now.
It became a classic almost right away. Mm-hmm. It won the National Book Award and began showing up on syllabuses. And even though it is set mainly in the 30s and 40s, it sadly, mm-hmm. it remains all too true. When Ellison spoke in his essay of, the petulance, you know, the unwillingness to acknowledge or recognize some part of our society, that's just too true even now. A really insightful writer who just kind of sees to the bottom of things, their work just doesn't go out of date.
As people read books, is it their tendency to identify most closely with the character who is identified as the hero, would you say? Or does people's attention tend to go elsewhere?
Normally, the reader's attention is focused on whoever is presented as, you know, the character whose mm-hmm. point of view we're in, whose experiences we're tracking more closely. But once in a while, I notice in class that a student will fasten on to a kind of peripheral character because of something resonates, and they might actually get a little frustrated that they're not finding out more about. The one that comes to mind immediately, great French classic novel Madame Bovary, where mainly watching Emma Bovary as she, you know, works out her destiny. Mm-hmm. I had a student who very strongly connected with her husband. And I thought, oh.
Oh, interesting.
You poor fella. Because he's, you know, he gets ridiculed a bit even in the book. Emma does not take him seriously for long. He was in a somewhat comparable situation, and he sort of fastened on to Charles Bovary. You know, that sort of thing happens fairly often. You know, a figure on the margins of the story for some reason kind of becomes salient. I teach Hamlet almost every year, and usually half the women students want to know more about Ophelia. What's her story? Mm-hmm. What happened to her mother? What was her relationship with Hamlet really like before everything started going sideways? And there are actually three or four young adult novels about Ophelia.
Right.
We're speaking exactly to this. We need more Ophelia. And mm-hmm. so, yeah, that happens fairly often.
How has the conception of the hero evolved over time? Does the hero need to do something, well, heroic, or is survival enough?
I would say the conception of the hero has changed quite a bit over time. Yeah, I mean, if we think back to the Homeric epics, say, the hero was someone who was distinguished by his, almost always his, strength or courage. And he triumphed. He overcame his opponents, his adversities. Usually the hero's triumph represented the triumph of the society. The hero embodied its values, its own rightness within its own identity. But I think there's been a turn, very noticeable in Hamlet, for instance, where the hero is actually a bit at odds in conflict with his society. And in the 1800s, 1900s, that became almost the more common kind of hero, someone whose adversary was his or her own society. Mm-hmm. Jane Eyre might be a good example, or the Byronic hero, or even someone like Batman,
okay.
who's very strong mm-hmm. and capable and resourceful, but seems to be in some ways on the margin or periphery, not all the way inside, you know, kind of a creature of the nighttime, as opposed to Superman. The Invisible Man in Ellison's novel is very much at odds with his society, not exactly by choice, but because the society doesn't want to recognize him. So merely getting through the day almost is a kind of triumph for him because the world he inhabits is trying to kind of wish him away or not recognize him, not see him. So he has to bend every nerve almost and draw on every resource he has just to kind of be on the street and, you know, and make a living and get through the day. The conception of who the hero is, Ignatius O'Reilly, what kind of hero is that? And yet he is because of his integrity. Because of his commitment to what he values, because of his willingness to sort of tolerate a certain solitariness and relying on himself. Outsiders at a certain point became more interesting than insiders. And that really drastically changed the conception of the hero, I think.
I'll be interested to see how The Great American Read chooses to address all of these issues around the hero. And as you noted, using books as diverse as The Invisible Man to Charlotte's Web to A Confederacy of Dunces, one of my favorite books, mm-hmm. I think it points to the strength of that theme that, well, probably almost every book will tie into that at some point, but pulling that out as one of the important ways in which we experience a book.
Oh, yeah. Well, I know in my own life as a reader, there were characters who I encountered at different stages of my life that mm-hmm. were important because they illustrated a way to be that made a difference for me, that kind of concretized or realized a certain possibility that I recognized was kind of a place I wanted to go. Elizabeth Bennet, oddly enough.
Jane Austen's
Which I didn't read until, Elizabeth Bennet in Pride and Prejudice. Mm-hmm. And the sort of moment right in the midpoint of the book where she reads this letter from Darcy after she's rejected his proposal and realizes she was mistaken about things, even though she says she prides herself on her insight and intelligence. And she's usually right about things. But in this very important instance, she had come to the wrong conclusion, and she has to change her mind. And watching someone who's very perceptive and witty realize a mistake and change course, that made a very big impression mm-hmm. on me. I immediately wanted to be capable of that myself, to know when I had gone a long way down the wrong path and yet have the honesty and the courage to self-correct.
Mm-hmm.
To change what I'd done. But another Jane Austen character, Captain Wentworth in Persuasion, which is her last novel, who at a crucial moment in his plot has to stop talking and really hear what Anne Elliot is saying. And he sort of rescues his own happiness and hers by just sitting still and listening and paying attention and picking up on what's between the lines of what she's saying, and that was a good lesson too.
Hmm.
So becoming a better listener, he's my hero for that reason.
Scott, it's been so great to have you as my guest on All About Books today.
Oh, thank you, Pat. It's wonderful to be here.
Scott Stanfield was my guest today on All About Books, thinking about the role of the hero in literature, which is one of the focus programs of The Great American Read. The Great American Read is an 8-part PBS series that explores and celebrates the power of reading, told through the prism of America's 100 best-loved novels. Viewers can participate in choosing America's favorite book by going to netnebraska.org/greatread. The book that Scott focused on in terms of the role of the hero in literature was the book The Invisible Man by Ralph Ellison. You've been listening to All About Books on NET Radio. Podcasts of this and other programs are available online when you visit netnebraska.org/radio. For All About Books, I'm Pat Leach.